Assalamu alaikum, greetings of peace. My next guest was recently on the Jimmy Dore show, also featured on Redacted.
One of the biggest lies is that a group of Muslims with almost no flying experience somehow hijacked four airliners, flew two of them into the Twin Towers, one of them into the Pentagon, one of them into a field in western Pennsylvania. We, of course, now know that didn't happen. Captain Dan Handley is a former 25-year United Airlines pilot, 10-year U.S. Naval aviator.
Flying for over 56 years. Came up as a Roman Catholic till the age of 18. He says he wandered through life without purpose, without religion. He had everything, but he was empty inside. And you can imagine, as a commercial airline pilot, the kind of things that open up, the temptations that come up. So there was a lot of partying involved at that time, until he realized it was a dark hole. Captain Dan went on to earnestly study many of the world religions, philosophy, psychology, histories, biography, everything that Captain Dan can get his hands on. In his journey, quest for the truth, he has discovered that Islam, submission to the creator, and that the creation was a way of life of mercy, love, and peace. And a few years later, he went on to take his shahada because he saw past all the lies and misinformation. And Captain Dan is here to share with some of the things that he discovered on his quest for the truth, especially for those people who are trying to connect Islam and Muslims to this evil event that took place and was a catalyst to the hate machine industry that's manufacturing hate and fear against Islam and Muslims. So without further ado, let's bring out our special guest, Captain Dan, here on The Dean Show.
Thank you, Eddie. Thank you very much. I appreciate the invitation to be here.
Thank you for being with us here.
I have much to share with your Muslim audience. I've been looking for Muslim podcasts like this forever, and I appreciate me getting on the program.
Thank you. My pleasure. So let's talk about your early beginnings. You grew up as a practicing Catholic, and then life took a turn. And can we start from there?
Sure. I was raised a Roman Catholic until age 18, when I broke away from the church, mainly because of the major changes in ecumenical council brought about in the Catholic religion. And I basically wandered without religion until my late 40s. And when I got into my late 40s, I was a Boeing 777 captain at United Airlines at the top of my career. My family was raised. I had everything I ever wanted and more, and I was making a good income. But I felt my life was very empty and meaningless. And I started studying everything under the sun, from a comparative analysis of world religion, psychology, philosophy, histories, biographies, etc. I couldn't consume enough information that I hadn't gotten in college because I was a math major. So it was sort of like a self-education at Dan Handley University here. And 9/11 hit, and I was still studying. And that's when I went through the spiritual experience, because at the time, United Airlines being a victim air carrier of 9/11, and also in bankruptcy, and the largest airline in the world, I was reporting safety and security issues at the airline involving 9/11, and they wanted to shut me up.
And from 9/11?
Yes, from 9/11. They didn't want me out saying what I was saying on the line. So I'll tell you real quick. They took me out of schedule when we couldn't come to an agreement. They wouldn't let me bring my attorneys in. So they put me on sick list, and I was going to go non-pay, and they said the only way you can do that is come in and talk with company health officials. Well, I knew they were going to do this, so I had previously seen mental health professionals in the Atlanta area because my union warned me they were going to do this. And basically, they made me go see a psychiatrist who, after a 15-minute diagnosis where I was very pleasant, diagnosed me as being bipolar, and they grounded me for life as a pilot. Well, that and other issues surrounding the 9/11 bankruptcy of United Airlines put me out of work at age 54. And over a period of time, my wife, because of other issues involved the mafia and mobbed up judges in Chicago, she separated from me and then divorced. And my two kids blamed me for the divorce, which alienated them from me. And still believe the official 9/11 story, and think I'm a whacked out conspiracy nut. They don't talk to me. I lost $4 million pay, pension, and stock, and it ruined my 35-year career in aviation and my reputation as a pilot. So I bottomed out and was still, I actually, when I went through that process, I was scared because I was going up against the biggest airline in the world, and I knew criminal elements were involved. And that's where I turned to God and began praying in earnest. That's when I increased my studying, and that's when I came to know, I was reading a book on unconditional love, a huge book, and that's when I came to understand the meaning of that, and that's when I found God. But it wasn't until after I was terminated at United that I decided, I was 54 years old at the time, 23 years ago, and I had to make plans for another career. So I decided I wanted to be a psychologist because it wasn't age dependent. And I went back to Georgia State University and I was majoring in psychology, but I was minoring in world religions because I thought with 80% of the global population's adherence to some religion, that it was a key part of the human psyche, their religious beliefs. And I thought as a psychologist, have an insight to where a person's coming from religion-wise, and it would lend itself well. And it was during this process that I was taking these world religion courses and doing this comparative analysis that I came to discover the true meaning of Islam. Not that what was being portrayed in the Western media by any stretch, and realized that it was a religion of peace and love and a way of life, and the sisterhood and brotherhood, the kinship there that you don't find in other religions, I was impressed with. And I studied the five pillars of Islam and realized that my sins would be forgiven, which I had many, if I converted to Islam. So I stopped, I cleaned up my life because I was a pretty heavy drinker at the time. I quit drinking and smoking and taking care of my health. And all of the above brought me peace and happiness that I didn't find in Catholicism and couldn't find searching out these other religions. There were some similarities, but that's basically how I wound up here on your program. Besides my personal jihad that I can talk about,
Your personal struggle, huh? That was your, because many people, they don't understand. Jihad simply means to struggle and strive to be the best that God wants you to be, the creator.
Right, exactly. So that's basically how I wound up converting. I'm living in Islamabad, Pakistan now, and some people, because I'm controversial, think I'm hiding out over here, but nothing could be further from the truth. I met, fell in love with, and married my Pakistani Muslim wife 14 years ago, and I've lived here happily ever since. So she's taught me a lot too, because she was born a Muslim and knew a lot about the faith. So she's been very helpful in that regard.
So that's interesting. That it's kind of reminds me of my story where I was in earnest, like you said, that you were studying different world religions, philosophy, histories, biography, anything you can pretty much get your hands on. You were, this is like I was swallowing everything, and I was searching for the meaning and the purpose of life. Right. And you kind of were going down a similar journey, it seems like.
Exactly. I saw your documentary and I saw the parallels. So you were somewhat of a wild man in your younger days, and you found religion, Islam, and Allah, and it turned your life around for you. So it was an impressive documentary, Eddie.
Yeah, when a person finds out what they've been created for, what the purpose of life is, then it gives meaning to life, obviously, yes. And when I started to also see, and also what you saw here, you discovered that Islam, submission to the creator, not the creation, was a way of life, of peace and love, a way of life that wasn't about terrorizing people, terrorism. I mean, that also hit home. And that's part of your journey where you said you discovered this is what Islam was. And now you start to see what it wasn't, what the media was portraying it as. Muslims being Arabs in the desert. What else is there? Terrorism associated with it. All these things were far from the truth. Seems like you also discovered the same thing.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, after 9/11, a 911 jet. I was a 777 captain, Boeing 777 captain out of New York. And my knee-jerk reaction, like a lot of people, was I believed the official story they were telling until very shortly afterwards when I started disbelieving it. And when I saw, I knew they were lying to us. And when I saw the lies and the treatment that Muslims were receiving and the demonization of Islam, I had this sympathy for Muslims worldwide. And that part of me drove me down the path to where I am today, because we'll get into the story here in a minute, but my intent, as well as my colleague, is to show, exonerate Muslims from any wrongdoing on 9/11.
On the 911, yes.
911. keep correcting me.
Yeah. You know, recently, not too long ago, I had a flat tire and I pulled over to go ahead and change it. And my son was with me and another brother. And I thought it was a great opportunity to go ahead and show him how to change a tire. And as I was changing the tire, a nice man came by, because the car actually fell. Alhamdulillah, thank God that I had put the tire under the car, because the way the jack was placed, the car actually swayed off of the jack and then fell onto the spare tire. The man came. Long story short, he was like, okay, this happened to me a lot of times. You got to place the jack like this instead of like this way instead of that way. He got under there. He was like helping out. And at the end, I asked, hey, would you like for me to buy you? We were by a smoothie shop. So would you like for me to buy you a smoothie? No, it's good. And we started talking. The moral of the story is, at the end, after he figured out we're Muslim and we started to talk to him a little bit about Islam, I asked him, do you know anything about Islam? And what he said is what the majority of Americans associate with Islam. He said, nothing except what I learned after 9/11.
Right.
And what you learn after 9/11 is probably everything wrong, everything that follows what this narrative of trying to demonize Muslims and Islam and the stereotypes that come along with it after you hear this. So this goes back into what you've been doing. Now, we know that Islam is totally clear of such evil actions, hurting innocent human beings, non-combatants. But now, like other guests that I've had also on who have investigated this, I don't know if you've heard of Enver Masood, who is the chief engineer. Have you ever met him?
No, I have not.
Okay. He also went down that route of educating Americans, and also others have come on to discuss what you're also discussing, but you're coming at it from a different perspective, because you're actually a veteran, been flying for, what is that, 56 years?
Well, actually, I flew 25 years at United, 10 years at in the Navy. I started flying 56 years ago at age 19. So
yeah,
I've been exposed to aviation for 56 years.
So now you're coming out and saying Muslims had nothing to do with it. Muslims weren't part of this.
Maybe I could get into our organization.
And then before you go on, I want to share something, and then you can also give your reaction to this. I don't know if you heard of David Ray Griffin. In this quote, he says, all the preferred evidence that America was attacked by Muslims on 9/11 when subject to critical scrutiny appears to have been fabricated. Professor Emeritus, he's a well-known also Christian, David Ray Griffin. You've heard of him?
Right. Oh, of course, yes. I know him well.
Of course. Okay.
I don't know him personally, but I know of his work.
Yes. Your response?
I agree. And
you agree?
We're attacked. Muslims were not involved. Muslims were not controlling the 9/11 aircraft. And if I could get into my organization now, Eddie, I'll tell you what our purpose and goal.
On the 9/11, they weren't. You're saying for the 9/11, what happened on 9/11?
Exactly, 9/11. I keep slipping, but I'll try to watch myself. I currently serve as director and international public spokesperson for a global grassroots effort called 9/11 Pilot Whistleblowers, whose website is at 911pilot.org, and I encourage you to write that down. I'll mention it several times more because it contains all the information in detail that I'm about to give you here in about 15 minutes. But the purpose, we have that website. We also have a YouTube channel, 911 Pilots. But the purpose of the organization, if you want to fasten your seatbelts here, is to show that there were no Muslim hijackers controlling the 9/11 aircraft, but that the aircraft were electronically hijacked and remotely controlled through employment of a system called the uninterruptible autopilot that enables a remote source to take complete control of the aircraft off of its flight management computer and guide it to its designated target, whether that's a building or another location. Now, once the system's engaged, the pilots cannot disconnect it. Even if they try to pull a circuit breaker to disconnect the electrical power, it has its own power source. Now, one of the goals of our organization has been to recruit highly experienced pilots, whether they're active or retired, civilian or military, from around the world, who will attest on film that not only could these alleged Muslim hijackers not have flown the aircraft profiles, but that they could not have done them themselves. And we've been successful in doing that. And if you go to the drop-down menu on that 911pilots.org website, you'll see pilot interviews. And we only put 10 of them on there because all the pilots were saying basically the same thing, that they couldn't have flown the aircraft. But for those of you, some might be challenged to believe that a large aircraft could be remotely controlled like this. We go into detail. I don't have sufficient time to cover all the examples, but we go into detail on the website and explain that the remote control of large aircraft goes all the way back 80 years to 1944 at the end of World War II, when the Army Air Corps launched, U.S. Army Air Corps launched Operation Aphrodite out of the UK, out of London to be exact. And what they did was take old B-17 bombers and gutted out the aircraft to lighten the weight of the aircraft. And they loaded it up so they could load it up with 30,000 pounds of Torpex, which is a highly incendiary compound. Now, pilots were required to make the takeoff, but once they got airborne, they bail out of the aircraft, and these aircraft were remotely guided, this was 80 years ago, into targets in Europe. We also point out on the website that Joe Kennedy, JFK's older brother, was killed on one of these top secret missions when his aircraft blew up due to a malfunction before he had a chance to bail out. But if you jump ahead, I'll skip Operation Northwoods. It's not on our website, but it's worth looking at. Operation Northwoods was a plan to invade Cuba based on the false pretense they were going to remotely fly military aircraft over Cuba by remote control and blow it up and say Castro shot it down so I could invade Cuba. Now, this was 1962, 39 years before 9/11. But if you jump ahead to 1984, NASA and the FAA conducted a joint crash test experiment in a remote location where they took a large four-engine commercial jet aircraft, a Boeing 720, loaded it up with crash dummies and cameras because they wanted to test crew and passenger survivability in the event of a crash landing. Now, they took this airplane off by remote control, flew around the pattern several times before they intentionally crash landed it. This was 17 years before 9/11, the remotely guiding aircraft. So if you jump ahead to the mid-90s is where we talk about this uninterruptible autopilot system. And you can Google or web search uninterruptible autopilot, and the first thing that will pop up is a Wikipedia article entitled Boeing Honeywell Uninterruptible Autopilot. And the article is misleading. It states that the stated purpose of the system is to prevent would-be hijackers from commandeering a commercial jet aircraft in flight by remotely taking care of it and flying it to one of many airports in the world for an auto landing. Basically, they're saying it's an anti-hijacking system. But the article goes on to say it wasn't patented until 2006, 5 years after 9/11. So you could look at the article and say, oh, look, they came up with an anti-hijacking device. Wrong. This system was developed and produced in the mid-1990s. We had informants come out from Raytheon, Boeing, the military and civilian sector, who will attest to the fact that this system was, in fact, in an airplane 5 years prior to 9/11.
But we 9/11. Contend,
9/11, yes, sir. We contend that since these hijackers couldn't have flown the aircraft, the only viable alternative explanation as to how these airplanes were operated that day is via this uninterruptible autopilot system, the remote control system. And people don't realize that the navigation system on today's modern commercial jet aircraft is in fact derived from cruise missile technology and is extremely accurate. Once a route, altitude, and speed is programmed into this flight management computer, that's exactly what that airplane is going to do within a couple meters. So I'd like to talk briefly here about the hijackers themselves, in particular, a 29-year-old Saudi Arabian hijacker named Hani Hanjour, who supposedly flew American 77 into the Pentagon. Hanjour came to the States in the mid-90s with the intention of being a pilot, and he started, he enrolled in classes flying little single-engine Cessna aircraft, and he was a poor student. It was well documented by Chicago Tribune, New York Times, ABC News, and a number of other media outlets that the guy was a poor student. He went back to Saudi Arabia only to return prior to 9/11 and was such a poor student that when he went to enroll in the school he attended before, they wouldn't take him because they didn't want to waste assets on him. So what is this maneuver that Hani Hanjour was supposed to perform? Well, American 77 took off from Washington Dulles Airport heading for the West Coast. It got to cruise altitude for a while before making an about face turn back into Washington and started a descent. And when it got to 7,000 feet, the aircraft makes this descending, accelerating 330-degree corkscrew turn to arrive precisely at the surface at over 500 knots. And this is the trick. He didn't skid the surface doing this. The airplane drove at a very low altitude into the Pentagon, striking the Office of Naval Intelligence on its first attempt. Now, this same maneuver was replicated in a flight simulator and flown by highly experienced pilots. And when they attempted this maneuver, they crashed the simulator, and yet Hanjour completed it on his first attempt. But the story even gets better than that, Eddie. Hanjour goes to the freeway airport in Bowie, Maryland, and wants to rent a little Cessna 172 aircraft. Now, when you show up in an airport and they don't know you, you have to go up on an evaluation flight. Well, Hanjour didn't go up on one flight over a three-day period. He went up on two flights with two separate instructors. He went up on, three flights with two separate instructors, and they both went to the chief flight instructor at the airport and say, don't rent him the airplane, he can't handle it. So what did Hanjour, this is a Cessna 172. So what did Hanjour do? He goes down the road to another fixed base operator, Congressional Air Charter, and goes up flying in a Cessna 172 with an instructor named Eddie Shalev. Now Eddie Shalev came back and reported that he was a good pilot. So the FBI sent out agents to investigate these four pilots, the three at the freeway airport and the Eddie Shalev. And they also sent out a 911 commission staffer who interrogated these pilots. So what appeared in the 911 commission final report? Only Eddie Shalev's testimony that he was a good pilot. The FBI and the 911 commission totally suppressed the information that he had flunked three check rides at the freeway airport. So we don't really have enough time for me to go into the hijackers that struck the twin tires, but basically the twin tires are only 208 feet wide and the wingspan on the 767 is about 160 feet. And for those pilots to, on their first attempt, to have struck those tires with pinpoint accuracy, had they been but several degrees off heading, they would have missed the buildings entirely. We got a recording here. But basically, that's it. Now, what did our organization do? The last 3 years, we've written every relevant level and branch of the U.S. government, petitioning them to investigate our allegation that the uninterruptible autopilot was employed that day. and what kind of a response did we get? We did, except from the FAA last year, a senior lawyer at the FAA said to me, Dan, you haven't proven that the uninterruptible autopilot was employed. And I suggest that we've shown Connie Hondra couldn't have flown the airplane and something hit the Pentagon, whether the cruise missile, some people believe, with an airborne swap of flight vehicles, or American 77. Long pause. He doesn't say anything to me. And then he says, go to the Department of Justice. The FAA doesn't handle criminal investigations. And I reminded him we'd been there several times with no luck. I mean, we went to President Biden, Director of National Intelligence, Avril Haines, Merrick Garland, the Attorney General, the Assistant Attorney General of Criminal Division, the FBI Director, Secretary of Transportation, you name it, and they won't investigate the most serious crime ever committed on American soil in its history. So I got to point out that not one single pilot was permitted to testify before the 911 Commission as to the absurdity of ludicrous notion. Go ahead.
Are you familiar with Lee Hamilton?
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah, he was the head of that commission, right? Didn't he say that that it was set up from the beginning to fail?
Right. It was underfunded, time constrained, and set up to fail. He specifically said that. As a matter of fact, I'll mention it now real quick. 911pilots.org created a documentary, and it's called 911, The Advent of the Ninth Crusade. And we claim there were eight major crusades, and what happened on 9/11 was an attack on Islam, and it was in fact the Ninth Crusade, although some people argue the number, but it goes into a lot of detail, not just about 911pilots.org and what we're claiming happened here, but about a whole bunch of other different elements. And it's really designed for those mainly Muslims that trigger that, because that's our target audience, is the 1.9 billion Muslims in the world. We want them to know that we want to exonerate Muslims from any wrongdoing by putting out this word. And if there's any Muslim podcaster out there, please contact me via Twitter at DanHanley4, and I'd be happy to accommodate you.
Well, this was definitely a turning point where the whole world now, and people have used this as a main talking point against Muslims and Islam, especially the hate industry. They capitalized on this big time. But you have a lot of Americans now who are waking up and they're questioning the official story, and they're coming to new conclusions, and the evidence is taking them in this kind of direction where you're at, that they're seeing that obviously anybody who studies Islam knows that Islam doesn't call for such evil actions, but now they're seeing that, hold on, it seems like there's Muslims. And there's this video out there that shows, and I think this was them capturing an Eid event, a celebration, and they put out there like Muslims were celebrating and whatnot on this. Have you seen that?
I've seen it, where they're celebrating what happened on 9/11.
On 9/11, yeah. But actually, I was told, this was a Eid celebration. And then they went and mischievously, the news media, they ended up using this footage, and a lot of people end up putting this footage out there. But that actually, that's a whole different topic. But then you had another group of people who are actually from a particular country we won't mention, but they were actually celebrating. This news caught them. They call them the dancing countrymen.
Yeah, right. I'll say it if you won't. But really, the big problem we have here is the Zionist owned and controlled mainstream media that controls 96% of the news we read, see, or hear. And it's totally, totally biased, and it puts out misinformation, disinformation, and people buy into it. And that's a big, and it's backed by what they back the government, and they have since 9/11 occurred. So they're complicit in this massive cover-up. I wish I could cover more about the cover-up and who all we believe was involved in it. But basically, that's a problem that we face. is the propaganda being spewed out by the mainstream media.
Thank you very much, Captain Dan, for spending some time with us and bringing in some of this information to light.
Well, thank you for having me, Eddie. I appreciate it. Have a good day.
You too. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam.
I cannot leave without giving you a gift. If you're not yet Muslim and you tune in to see what these Muslims are talking about and you like a free copy of the Quran, go ahead and visit thedeanshow.com. We'll take care of the postage and everything and get it delivered to you. And if you still have some questions about Islam, call us at 1-800-662-4752. We'll see you next time. Until then, peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum. And if you like this episode of The Dean Show, like this video, share this video far and wide, and support us on our Patreon page so we can continue this work. Thank you for tuning in. Peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum.